Siren Radio.
I thought I'd just leave it there, just until it actually emerged in its own unique, wonderful and wondrous way. Rory, this is the first time in 2020 that you have been in the studio for Gabriella's forecast for Lincoln, England, from Gibraltar. It's exciting, isn't it?
Yes, very much so.
Exactly. You could have responded by saying, but I've been listening online for the last few weeks. He hasn't, Gabriella. I mean, we know that. Anyway, Gabriella, it is time for that moment. Take it away.
Okay, so the weather for Lincoln today is highs of 8 degrees centigrade, lows of 5 degrees centigrade, and it's a day of thick cloud and light winds.
That's all we need to know.
Live from Gibraltar, with or without her faithful friend Frodo, it's time for Gabriella Peralta on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
Of course, it isn't all that we actually need to know, because, Rory, if we look at the Gibraltar Chronicle online there, we can see there is Gabriella's, I think, left shoulder. There's her left ear.
Yeah.
And she is in... It's what's referred to in the trade, for the benefit of our radio listener, as an over-the-shoulder shot. Were it video,
yeah,
which of course it might be, but it's well put together. And why, pray tell, Gabriella, have you actually positioned yourself in such a wondrous way in the Gibraltar Chronicle this very day?
Well, we were doing an interview yesterday with Clubhouse, because they're opening new premises, so they're finally moving from the old one, which was about a room, to now a whole building they've got. So I was just talking to the CEO yesterday, ahead of its official unveiling today, which is going on at 3 o'clock today. So it's kind of just finding out what's happening, letting people know what's happening before the opening. So so I'll put a picture of her doing an interview, and in the inside of the article, if you subscribe to the Chronicle and can see premium content, you can see pictures of the workers doing the finishing touches on the building right before its unveiling. So they're hoping now that they've got a whole building, they've got meeting rooms, it's meant that it's a lot more privacy. Before, it was literally one room. So if you have any mental health issues and you went to Clubhouse, you were walking into a room full of people. And that can be very intimidating for someone, especially when they've just...
It was more kind of club room, as opposed to clubhouse. It was more club room. So
yeah,
I mean, there's a problem
was
with respect to the line
there.
Yeah,
it was just a room. They had everything there. They had their kitchen there. They had, they would have meetings and all that there. And if you're walking to Clubhouse because you're reaching out for help, you don't want to, you know, walk into a room full of 20 people and not have any privacy.
Interesting test, so though, wouldn't it? If you're a bit sensitive and a bit sort of social, if the first thing you have to do to actually talk about sensitive social-based issue is actually encounter a room full of 20 people, it might be kill or cure. You know, just a thought, really.
Yeah.
Rory, you're nodding sagely, thinking...
It's a terrifying thought.
Yeah.
If you go there just to, you know...
It's a quiet conversation.
This and this, but, now 20 people are listening to me. Oh, very well, then.
Yeah, well, they've got six staff, and then just 20 was like an example, but they would have the members coming in and out all day. So
could have more.
They would have a lot of people, so it depended on the time of day. And if you're a vulnerable person, you know, you're feeling vulnerable because you've got mental health issues, you don't want to walk into a room full of people. So now it's much better. You walk in, there's a reception, and right beside the reception, there's a private meeting room, so no one has to see you, apart from a member of staff. So you walk in, you'll book an appointment for a member of staff, and they'll see you in a private room away from maybe social events going in the other part of the building, where they'll have maybe like a cooking class, where they're teaching people recipes, or they're having like a social lunch with a few of the members. So you won't be walking into the middle of that. You'll be you can talk in private about your anything that you want to talk about, really. So it's for them, it's... great, the new building. Really is. It changes, I think.
But surely the very fact that you've reported on them is actually the greatest thing about the whole thing. I mean, the fact that they got you, Gabriella Peralta, to actually do the story via the actual copy. I mean, that has to be. I mean, that's the equivalent to, I suppose, back in the last century, getting a visit from Lady Di.
I wouldn't consider it. We're close to that.
I don't know.
I'm going to see them again today when they formally unveil the building.
Excellent.
And everything's been finished up and done.
Well, as we were sort of pointing out, Richard Fitzwilliams, who's coming up in a matter of moments from now, very much over 100 pieces he's actually done on the challenge that's actually there. Interesting enough, we were actually commenting yesterday on when the Royals go abroad, they project soft power very well. Splendid ambassadors, and he has a little interesting line on Charles's historic visit to Israel. Lines on that point. Her other line, the Queen absolutely right, according to Richard Fitzwilliams. Well, no surprise there, though. Okay, let's move on. Gabriella, would you like Rory McGowan? Did I say Rory McGowan? I did for a moment. I was going to say Rory McDonald, but no, it's Rory McGowan. Would you like Rory to ask you those last two questions?
Yes, please.
Okay.
So I will go. Proceed then. Well, Gabriella, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today on the show?
I have, thank you.
And will you be back with the weather next Thursday?
I'll be back next Thursday.
And frankly, because of the clubhouse now being formally opened in Gibraltar and taking through, frankly, any excuse to play this. Happy days, what joys, what wonderful routines. Best enjoyed with a glass of milk in many ways. Possibly Royal Peter milk, actually, because in a line which I don't think Richard has commented on about, obviously the Queen's eldest grandson is now actually trading on his status in TV ads in China. Well, we've already got an outbreak there. Yeah.
Photographs.
Yeah. He looks, I mean, Royal Peter for Hire in China, an exclusive in the Daily Mail earlier this week. The Queen's grandson using his royal connections to sell milk on Chinese television.
But you remember very well that when he married Orton Kelly, he sold the rights reported, I think, half a million to Hello.
Exactly.
The only royal who escaped was Prince William, who wasn't there. I mean, that is not the way to conduct business.
Well, it kind of sets the scene. And when you, I mean, Meghan Markle, I wonder actually what Trevor Engelson, Meghan's first husband, would actually make about this. Because after all, that whole thing was about 2 years that lasted. So it's kind of par for the course. I mean, I'm not suggesting that, of course, Meghan and Harry are in any way, shape, or form in some sort of marital challenge here. But at the same time, you know, use them, wear them out, move on. It's a possible way forward.
The answer is, of course, we simply don't know. But regarding Trevor Engelson, he's been very quiet. Mm. He's kept his mouth shut.
Unlike her dad.
I mean, to give him an hour and a half.
Mm. 90 minutes.
Time. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's simply unbelievable. There was nothing new in it that...
He thinks his daughter's destroying the monarchy. He thinks it's a disgrace the way they're behaving. You know, he's clearly
Alex, the real danger, as you know very well, has at the end of that Southern Africa tour, which had been such a triumph, they ruined it by going ballistic about the British media. I would point out that in Canada, I'm afraid, the paparazzi appear to be camped around their home, according to reports. There are lots of trouble there.
Got to focus on Archie.
The problem is with that documentary last night. As I saw it, there's one particular difficulty, and that is that he seems to me, if he's given a flight and a ticket, he's well enough to come into court.
Mm.
And if that's the case, I mean, she really ought to drop the case.
She won't. She's American. She's going to go for it.
I suspect not, but the point is, if for any reason you had I have no idea how, shall we say, it may well be settled out of court. It won't be officially dropped. The point, however, is that if she persists, if you have a Markle versus Markle circus, which is what it would be, and I mean, that's why the royals keep out of court. I mean, the Princess Anne and the dog, and also, I think it was Viscount Linley against the now defunct Today newspaper. But that in the last century, there have been cases, but they've been settled as Paul Burrell's, a most bizarre episode.
Yeah, but he was a butler. He was a butler.
Indeed, he was a butler.
And the butler did it. We know that.
The butler was an innocent man, as we discovered in rather extraordinary ways when the Queen suddenly remembered that he'd mentioned he had possessions of Diana's. The problem goes back to Victorian times when, in two occasions which shocked Queen Victoria, Edward VII, when Prince of Wales, actually appeared in court. One of them was a truly... Well, they were both pretty scandalous, one containing about a woman and the other about a card game. But the point is, royals shouldn't ask...
Richard, we'd be remiss if I didn't actually relay from one of our good friends and mutual colleagues in Los Angeles, Phil Learness, his own take on the system, which he specifically last night said, could you please outline this to Richard? I should have actually just recorded the clip and played that, but I'm going to actually reiterate it as best as I can from Phil Learness. So are you ready for this little comment, Richard, that comes, as we say, from Phil Learness and his observations of the Megxit challenge?
I am...
Okay. Phil believes that with Meghan being an actor, what better way for the royal family to deflect from the whole Prince Andrew shenanigans than actually ensuring that Meghan and Harry take centre stage in terms of this, that get folks such as yourself doing hundreds of interviews for CNN, etc. Is it all a huge conspiracy, Richard?
Well, I wish I thought that an element of that might be true. I mean, the point... Of course, with reference to Prince Andrew, firstly, there's a lot of possible evidence that may be made available, which may incriminate him further. Who knows? Perhaps later this year. Also, as we know, there are investigations. We know Andrew, as far as I know, has not given evidence as yet to a particular investigation, including the FBI. Precisely where that is going, we do not know, other than the fact that he's, for the foreseeable future, quote, which means forever, got 230 patronages, including the colonel of the Grenadier Guards, to spread around other members of the royal family. At least that's the way it looks to me. Now, as I say, we could get
We could be here for hours and hours, and you've got to be off to another interview by the time we get around to 9:35.
No, I mean, there's plenty of time. The point there is, with reference to Harry and Meghan, that wherever they are, there'll be news, and they're discovering this. I don't know what they thought, but, I mean, I didn't know how prevalent the paparazzi were in North America. I knew in Hollywood. The point, unfortunately, for them is that they had practically no trouble. There was a helicopter over there, the Cotswold home they rented. The splash news, that was appalling. There is the danger of the paparazzi, but the moment they get to Canada, there it is. And
they're just doing a job, Richard, that's all. They're just trying to make a living by actually, you know, snapping some candid shots of, well, the former HRH brands that used to be Sussex doing their stuff.
Just trying to make a living, yes.
No. I mean, surely if Harry can make a living, you know, he's looking to get millions, then your average cameraman can obviously sort of do that as well. It's usually male.
Indeed. I think you should write a book, My Sympathy with the Paparazzi. That would liven life up. That really would.
I just shorten it, and I think I'd try and call it.
The point is, it's been a most extraordinary period. It really has in royal life.
But in a world.
Harry's furious. Harry, absolutely furious that he's losing his military
link. Of course. He was very upset. He's got his friends doing videos of himself giving messages, sort of saying how disappointed he is about the whole thing.
Well, the use of friends is not wise in this case. I wish they'd concentrate on the future they want as opposed to having friends criticise the royals. The point is the Queen had no alternative but to ensure that a pretty tough statement, not using royals titles and also not participate. You can't be half out.
In the words of another well-known royalty member of television, you're fired. Lord Sugar, of course.
Effectively, that is the case. And let's hope they don't go into the, if I may introduce, because we're really getting behind in full, the dark side of the force.
Well, this is it. Now, we will welcome to the studio, we'll obviously welcome Rory McGowan back for us, but also we welcome back Eleanor Lodge. How are you, Eleanor?
I'm good, thank you. Yes, good. Very good.
As a lass from Yorkshire, who effectively would have been an ideal member of the royal family if, you know, years had matched them very well. Any sort of final closing thoughts on the whole Megxit scenario before we go into the reviews?
I think they should do what's best for them at the end of the day. It's their life, isn't it?
The heck with the rest of the royal family.
But it does matter, you know, in what way you do it. If you spring a statement out without telling the Queen and senior members of the royal family when you've been negotiating for months with them, it's not wise.
So, Eleanor, your choice. Would you like Richard to go down the line of Star Wars The Legend of Skywalker, which you may or may not have seen?
I have seen. Ooh.
Or 1917, which again, you may or may not have seen. Which one do you want to do first?
We'll go with the first.
We're going to. Rory, would you concur?
We can concur. I'm totally down for either.
And have you seen Star Wars?
I'm going to see 1917.
Well, then
we've
all seen the first movie, and we've all seen the fact that we are all Skywalker. There's not a Skywalker been here for years. There is now.
Well,
spoiler.
There's a billion in the bank when it comes to this particular movie. I have to say that I've loved the take so far that J.J. Abrams has given the a very, very tired franchise he inherited from George Lucas. But, I mean, this one, the fans love it. The fans are going to see it. Threat of revenge by the revived, by Ian McDiarmid playing Emperor Palpatine, very, very evil. Well, Kylo Ren goes to, played by Adam Driver, and watch him in Marriage Story, you'll see he really does have depths of acting, I had no idea. Goes to the planet Energol, and to Palpatine, and bails a vast armada of destroyers, which he's going to use to crush the resistance. Rey continues, Jedi, played by Daisy Ridley, of course, Jedi training under Leia Organa. We have footage of Carrie Fisher from apparently taken from previous Star Wars movies, which was not seen, the leader of the resistance, and then we meet Finn, Poe, Chewbacca, BB-8, 3CPO, and so forth, departing in the Millennium Falcon to Passana. Now, here, the main gist of this, just to cut it to the quick, good versus evil, how the shade, and various shades of it, will Rey succumb to the dark side, which is what Kylo Ren believes?
Not just Rey. What about C-3PO and those red eyes, eh?
Well, I have to say that, I mean, the problem with this movie, I felt at the end of it like wanting to ban the lightsaber, because we have so many. It's rather like a Marvel movie. It's the first Star Wars movie that really did resemble, with loud music, with constant duels between the two of them in one form or another, and endless close-ups. And this is what a few people I've spoken to have agreed got to me, that it did resemble some of those Marvel movies where you have those shootouts, those fights, and so forth. It became, for me, very, very repetitive. The fact that Palpatine, well, we won't say what happens to him, but it's perfectly obvious what he's likely to. The fact that all the, you know, every former link with a Star Wars movie that you could possibly have is brought back. Or
well, not everyone, Richard. I was very disappointed there was no sign of Jar Jar Binks, personally.
Yes, yes, yes. Now, that is true. He hasn't featured much.
How rude! Exactly. Yeah,
that was disastrous. But I mean, the whole point with this, it's very colourful. The battle scenes make very little sense. Again, some of Abrams' movies, some of his Star Wars movies, have had absolutely marvellous battle scenes, and some based on World War II epics. In this case, you've got this armada just occasionally floating above, and you've got vast numbers of things, obviously CGI'd, and I didn't feel that it was, so to speak, a living entity. I quite enjoyed bits of it, but it was very long, very loud. You had loud music constantly, and you had these constant scenes with Kylo Ren trying to draw.
What was all that about Poe? I mean, where's Dipsy Tinky Winky and La La as well? I mean, there's Poe Cameron doing his stuff. I'm thinking, what's going on here?
What indeed? I mean, the thing is, for those who like it, and the Richard E. Grant, incidentally, as a really, really evil general, he, with the same snarl, he
was channeling his inner Peter Cushing, you see. You know,
absolutely, absolutely.
Domhnall Gleeson, on the other hand, less so, still. Critics, basically, in terms of the Rotten Tomatoes scenario, critics' consensus, Star Wars The Rise of Skywalker suffers from a frustrating lack of imagination that concludes this beloved saga with fan-focused devotion. Eleanor, did you go out of choice, or was it a case of out of suffrage you were dragged along to go and see The Rise of Skywalker?
Well, I suppose I was dragged, but I did enjoy it when I was there. I haven't seen any of the others, so I suppose I was very naive.
Any of the eight?
Well, I've seen sort of bits and when they're on TV, but I've never sat down to watch them. But my boyfriend wanted to go see it, so I had a feeling
that might be the case.
He pulled me along, but I did enjoy it. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a good film, but I don't know the history of the film. So,
as you can see, Richard, there we are, young lady dragged along, possibly unwillingly, by her partner, just to actually sort of put up with it for some sort of reason. It's the levels.
One of the things is, it was certainly at 2 hours, 12 minutes, it feels it. I mean, the others didn't tend to.
Yeah, and Rory?
I agree with the Rotten Tomatoes review that you read. I feel like there's a lot in the movie which is just very, like, oh, you remember this? Mm. Well, we're doing it again. Mm. And, oh, you loved it last time. And
apparently, according to Robin Pierce, and he should know, he's the Starburst critic and obviously contributed to the Midweek Drive and the Stone Tapes, he was saying he'd seen an interview with Carrie Fisher, obviously before she sadly passed away, that the original plan was for her to actually take on board that character of Rey and basically be the sort of closing thing. So all of the sort of CGI that was sort of in there, the idea was if she had lived, she would have been the focus of the Rise of Skywalker, and that would have been the essence. Interesting. Alternative views. Richard, if we can take a mini rest. I know you're sort of off before we jump into 1917, but we'll just have a very, very short musical ident, because I know you'll appreciate this, and it'll keep us bubbling along quite nicely in the positive way, because back in 1977, when nobody quite knew what cultural impact this movie was likely to have, a band called Miko produced this. We'll be right back. I can see Richard tapping your toes there and basically sort of getting on down.
You really do. It all started in the galaxy.
Far away. They're all sort of hind signal motions. Okay, Richard, I even saw then something you didn't even bring out on your CNN Royal interviews, the foam index fingers that you've actually got there, giant index fingers. It's genius. Which possibly they might have actually used in 1917. In a very, very short number of hours, we will be finding out what Phil Leonis's Oscar and Academy Award predictions are. We'll be finding out what Emma Tinson's Academy Award nominations are. And, of course, Richard will be putting his would win, will win, should win. Is it likely to be an all-star win for 1917, Richard? But let's talk about the movie before we get any further.
Well, don't forget the Screen Actors Guild Awards have come out. And, of course, Parasite did so well. So there are nice question marks over what might or might not happen. I mean, this is a 1917 absolutely remarkable film directed by Sam Mendes. And it's based on the service of his grandfather and his experiences in the First World War, where he was a messenger. And it really, really is extraordinary. I mean, Mendes has been such a gift to the screen. American Beauty, Road to Perdition, an absolutely consummate director. But here, the most extraordinary fact of this movie is that, I mean, his imagination seems to be boundless. We see a movie that appears, it isn't, but it appears to be shot in a single take. And that lends such immediacy and urgency because screen time is, in fact, real time, or seems to be. I mean, it wasn't filmed in that way. It couldn't be. But you have these terrifying scenes of horror and destruction and a derelict landscape with the dead and the unrecognizably scarred, with the mud and the horror of it and the stark trees such as they are. I mean, it's like a Paul Nash painting come alive. The German forces have made a strategic withdrawal to pre-prepared positions. The hope is the British will counterattack. And two young soldiers, Lance Corporal William Schofield, played by George Mackay, and Lance Corporal Tom Blake, played by Dean Charles Chapman, are sent by General Ellen Moore, played by Colin Firth, to personally deliver a message to Colonel Mackenzie, played by Benedict Cumberbatch, to halt an attack elsewhere on the front, which it is now realized would be suicidal. Why are they sent? Because all communications are down. As a result, so much depends on it. The lives of 1,600 soldiers, including Blake's brother. I mean, this is a well-cast movie, but there is never a contrived moment. I mean, what really, really appealed to me here is that you are so involved in their journey. Nightmarish images, rotting corpses in the rodent-infested filth, the eeriness of the enemy's deserted trenches, the derelict shell of a village bathed in a surreal glow, the sniper threat, and an interesting homage to Alfred Hitchcock from an enemy aircraft. I mean, this is an absolutely pivotal mission. And as the tension mounts, this becomes, so to speak, our mission as well. And I thought it was a screen triumph. I think it's a tribute to gallantry, and it's a pretty visceral indictment of the endless horror that conflict brings. I mean, this really is an important film, and it's a film that rightly won at the Globes for Best Drama, and yes, it might well do well at the Oscars, but nobody knows. So that adds the excitement of a ceremony where, quite honestly, one thing we can be certain, we know who's going to win the acting awards.
Joaquin Phoenix.
It's a laugh.
The only thing I would say, Richard, you know, with respect to 1917, is wouldn't it have been easier if they just sent an Instagram message or a sort of text? Just a thought. Anyway.
Well, in those days, you know, there were difficulties.
Really? You say back in 1917 we did a Facebook message then, possibly old school.
I have to say, I think you would find it a very immersive experience. I mean, this is the whole idea, that you conjure up a sort of human Golgotha, and it works brilliant.
Should you see it in IMAX, though, Richard? Should you see it in the full, all-encompassing IMAX
3D? I just simply say you should see it in the large screen if possible.
Right. And obviously not on your mobile phone.
Well, I knew you'd bring that up, but the point... I mean, it does so devalue the experience. It is inevitable, of course, and, I mean, theatre and ballet and, you know, opera, they're so fortunate because they retain that cachet because, whereas you can obviously have film versions, and, I mean, there's a brilliant idea to bring that to audiences who can never see them, absolutely, but nothing like the live performance, we all know that. Well, nothing like the large screens, what I emphasise.
Exactly, and nothing like these radio links every Thursday, courtesy of Richard Fitzwilliams, Siren Radio and more. But let's quickly check the team out. Rory, 1917, is it on your I must see this if it's the last thing I do list?
I will be checking it out, yes. It seems very interesting. There's a lot of different set pieces from what it looks like the trailer, and yet it's all done in one take.
Well, it isn't. I mean, actually...
Well,
no, but that's,
you know, it's made to look like it's done in one take.
We see it in one take, exactly, but yes. That involves you with the journey. As I say, if you believe what you're seeing is... You know, cinema time is also real time. It really does add urgency to it.
And I would add to the notion, if you want a really classic one take, Touch of Evil, Orson Welles. That is a good example of one take.
Oh, a Touch of Evil, the beginning there.
Birdman as well?
That's you.
Because that's like the movie that I was thinking, oh, that was done in one take. That's the first time I
Michael
saw it
Keaton.
Being done. So.
Yeah, yeah. Except it isn't. It's the magic of the
Orson Welles, Charlton Heston, oh, yes.
Yeah. But not Birdman, that was Michael Keaton. You remember
yes.
Birdman.
It was.
Eleanor, what about yourself?
Yeah, I'd like to see it, yeah. I love a cinema trip, so any opportunity.
Except when you drag along to see Star Wars.
Yeah.
Okay, Eleanor, let's just test you now. Can you remember the last two questions we need to put to Richard Fitzwilliams before he heads off? Where are you heading off to for the next set of interviews, Richard?
This is BBC Scotland.
Oh.
This is about the cartoon featuring Prince George at 6. And also the way
royals it's going to be wonderful because, you know, it's another sort of thing where the views of the royal family seen through the eyes of Prince George. It's awesome stuff from that point.
Rather young, don't you think?
Yeah, but at the end of the day, in one sense young, but given the evolution of hydrogen atoms over the last millennia, we're all basically
now that's a topic you ought to have pieces on. Yeah. The evolution of hydrogen atoms over
exactly.
the last millennia.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's a glorious sentence.
Yeah, it kind of ups the whole thing. Eleanor has now been briefed fully by her her sort of team, and they've actually sort of said, so she's a bit like when you go to one of those ambassadorial scenarios and you basically have somebody actually whispering in your earpiece exactly who and what to actually do. So Eleanor's now going to deliver those two questions effortlessly. Go, Eleanor.
Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this morning, Richard?
Oh, I most certainly have. We've had a lovely long time. We've started the movie catch-up. We have to work at it, but then Royal and Veteran, rather than a lot of Royal News. I mean, I've never known anything quite like
Richard,
this.
Richard, just take some Chinese milk and settle down. That'll be fine. You know,
well, I even did an interview, you know, with a Vietnamese newspaper.
But it gets to Vietnam.
Quite extraordinary, from Turkey to Colombia.
Yeah. Well, it just shows the level of interest that there happens to be.
That will come out on the public record later, I'm sure.
And the final question is... She's forgotten how... Never mind. Rory, can you remember the final question?
Will you be joining us again soon, Richard?
Yes.
Oh, I most certainly will.
Yes.
Lots of movies to talk about.
That's right.
By then, I'm rather hoping that the, you know, this particular royal phase has calmed down just a bit, because... Bits of it can get pretty destructive.
And in a world where you've got Davos, where you've got impeachment, where you've actually got outbreaks of SARS, where you've got earthquakes in Teesside, you know, clearly, you know, you've just got to sort of ease back on the whole thing. Richard will be back, not in seven, well, actually, yes, in 7 days, as opposed to 7 seconds.
Yes, indeed, and so will Markle versus Markle, if things don't alter.
Bless her. She's just doing the best she can, that's all. Just the best she can.
Do you believe that?
Sen bulma gisma dile nga fop ni la xamuma li nek ci sama sou ak sigin bekuma kuma xol dal dine yow li nek ci yow mo nessi man li nessi moy dile mu jappal. Child is born into
just as long as I stay. J'assume les raisons qui nous poussent de changer tout. J'aimerais qu'on oublie leur couleur pour qu'ils espèrent. Beaucoup de sentiments, de race qu'il faut, qu'ils désespèrent. Je veux les gamins ouverts, les amis pour parler de leur peine, de leur joie pour qu'ils le fient. Des infos qui ne divisent pas. Changer. Seven seconds away, just as long.
Seven seconds. Oh, a few more seconds than that and Everton would have actually won. I'm sorry. I mean, clearly, you know, it's not going to help your campaigning to sort of, you know, take away from the actual genius that is Mike Ashley in terms of appointing the best successor to the Spanish chap that you could ever wish for, you know, and getting that result against Everton and, of course, beating Chelsea. I mean, you know, what's going on there? I mean, you must be sick as the proverbial parrot, Ian.
I'm not, no. I hope they win. But, I'd like to see them play well for a change, though.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a results. It's a results game, Ian. That's what it's all about.
What a cliche that is, Alex.
Yeah. Emma Street probably just so she's in a state of shock because Tottenham won last night. So obviously, you know, probably won't see Emma. She'll be, you know, celebrating the first win of 2020 for Jose Mourinho. But the good news is we do have Rory McGowan back with us.
Yes, we do.
Mm-hmm. And we also.
I thought the good news was he got within 13 points of Manchester for Liverpool. Now, shouldn't I?
And we also have. Yeah, thanks to Sergio Aguero and, of course, the return of Emerick Laporte, which is always good news. Let's not talk about Crystal Palace. We also have the welcome return of Eleanor Lodge as well.
Good morning.
Good morning.
In case you're wondering, Eleanor is reading Communications, Public Relations and Journalism at the University of Lincoln. Second year, doing fine stuff there. Actually scored a stonking result, actually, for community engagement, which actually just knocked the ball. Just a whole range of things. The highest mark I've actually given in that.
Oh,
ever,
wow.
Actually. So, yeah, well done.
News to me. Thank
well,
you very much.
Well, there you are. And we also have Rory, who, as we mentioned, we haven't mentioned today, but is a creative writer and journalist. It's like the two things were meant to be, you know, creative writing and journalism. It's like the suggestion that journalists ever kind
of... they don't overlap too often.
Yeah, you can write great stories like how the Queen's grandson is selling Chinese milk.
That has shocked you, hasn't it, Rory?
It really has. Yeah. I don't know why it's front page news in the Daily Mail. I mean, I understand that, but like... I don't know why
Tuesday's
it gets me so
Mail.
Much.
Just so impressed with it. I thought I must have a hard copy of that. So I physically brought it along. I mean, are you bothered by the shenanigans with respect to the royal family, Ian? Or are you more concerned with respect to the onset of coronaviruses kind of translating from China over to Tyneside?
I'm not really too bothered about either. Mm. To tell the truth, I think it's 17 people in China being have died from this virus. Mm. I know, and the Chinese have now sort of told the people living in the city not to leave the city. So I assume that'll help a lot. Mm. So I don't know if it's.
Well, let's face it, you know, it could be make that sort of last two questions completely pointless because you may come back next week if we're not sort of dying by then.
Yeah, it's the famous last words. Oh, I don't care about the virus. Mm. The next week later, everyone's got the virus.
Strong words. Anyway, Ian, I know you're always keen to listen to what Tessa Snart has provided for her tune of the week, he says, and she was very pleased last week that you gave it a thumbs up. To what you actually heard.
Not really this stuff to Tessa, are you?
It is on podcast, so she can actually listen to it. So it's not.
Oh, I see.
That's the magic of this radio thing, Ian. You know, and the fact that we could, you know, you can, if you wish, you know, actually download all of your contributions since 2010, Ian. If you wish, you know, they're all actually there. Oh. Let's look for the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. Download them.
I was just thinking, actually, I was waiting for your call. I've learned after 10 years, I think it is, to hold the phone with one hand and drink my tea in another.
Exactly. And if anything is worthwhile doing these programmes for, it's to build up that level of...
multi-skilling.
Exactly. Previously held only by females in general, who I think are capable of doing that. You know, males, it takes a long time to actually get there, but the skill set is right. Anyway, the story from this particular singer is she's from Scotland. Her name is Katie with a double E. That's Katie, and she's got a little number called "Show Your Hand." Are you ready for this, Ian Lennox?
Yes, I am.
Show your hand. Show your hand. Hear them call. Show your hand. Show your hand. Show your hand. Hear them call. Show your hand. On a dark and misty evening, on the streets that full of fear, where the dealers of the night go out to play. A stranger could get lost forever with no friendly voice to hear. Show your hand.
band then. 22-year-old singer-songwriter Katie Cross. No, she's just mildly annoyed. From Bishopriggs near Glasgow, she's already worked with names including Doogie McLean, Barbara Dixon, Corinne Polwart, James Grant, Red Sky July, John Doyle and Finlay Napier. But, as we know, doesn't matter a hell of beans, really, even though it is Tessa's Tune of the Week. What does Ian Lennox make of it?
I don't really know, actually. I've got it. I think she's certainly got a lot of potential.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know enough about music to sort of really talk about how she could develop it. But she's, I don't know. Yes.
He doesn't know.
Interesting.
He doesn't know. Rory McGowan, do you know? Is it something which will float your boat, having just said, Tessa seems to have a lot of country music tunes, doesn't she? That's because she does sound in country vision, my boy.
Yes, it was a silly question. But nevertheless, I think it was an all right song. Whether it would be one that I listen to regularly is up for debate. Mm. However, you know, it's not something where I wanted to plug my ears.
So, all right, give me a choice between, I don't know, one of my lectures and say listening to Katie Cross, is that something that you'd actually go for?
I mean, you can't put me in this position, because if I say the song, then you're just going to be like, oh, well, okay,
yeah.
Then.
Yeah, so that's fine.
So
Emma Street's here now, so you can leave.
Yeah. One of the lectures would be probably what I would rather listen to. More insight, for sure.
We'll let you pass over one microphone to Emma, who, as you'll be pleased to know, Ian, has recovered from her celebrating the first ever league victory of 2020 for her side, beating the might of Norwich City. Norwich City, 2-1, Emma.
I know, very happy.
She's going to get headphones and various other bits and pieces together. Eleanor, has got... Have you any interest in football whatsoever?
I don't, if I'm being honest.
Honesty is the best policy, Eleanor.
Just say you like Manchester City, you'll give you an easy time after that.
Ian, I couldn't possibly, I couldn't possibly go down any sort of route from that line of things. But what did you make of Katie Cross and Show Your Hand?
Yeah, I thought she was good. It's not my genre of choice, but she's obviously got talent because it was very, very well done. But as Rory said, I don't think it'd be something that I would... go to listen to.
And I'm not sure, Emma, whether it kind of caught any of that, or was it just a case of, no, I must get into the studio, my people are awaiting.
I didn't catch any of that. I was rushing. The traffic is mad.
Crazy. Anyway, it's good that you're here. Have you got any questions you want to put to Ian Lennox, of course, whose Newcastle United side are just sort of, you're beating Chelsea, they're drawing with Everton, you know, it's amazing.
Have I missed anything important, Ian?
No.
There we are. Thank you, Ian, for that sort of summation of the last 51 minutes that we've been actually sort of shelling blood out. You know, I mean, I put it to you, sir, and indeed the wonderful Bill Steele. If in the height of Bill's hosting of the Time Tees Tea Time programme today at 6, or indeed other line of things that were actually there, if somebody actually sort of come and said, I missed anything interesting? No. Great. Fantastic.
I could tell you some stories, but I've never had it on.
Yeah, you someday I'm sure that we will be revealing some of those stories. Actually, it's time to Bill actually came back on the show. He used to be quite a regular. But then, of course, he realised he couldn't match yourself, Ian Lennox, and so he just knocked him into a cocked hat when it comes to our token Geordie. Still, life continues.
Token Geordie. Yeah,
I wondered if you'd just pick up on it.
Ian, away, man.
You're fairly closer to this area than I was, but we heard on news that there'd been an earthquake in Teesside, a 2.4 on the Richter scale. Did you feel anything in Tyneside, or are we all okay?
I didn't hear anything. No one told me about it.
Okay.
I've got double glazing, so...
Yeah, that's not necessarily the best thing.
I gather there's no damage, thank
God. Yeah, well, precisely, because after all, you know, I mean, at the end of the centre, the rule to so many marvellous things there. So, Emma, you can do both questions, given that Eleanor managed one and Rory did the other one with respect to your device. So I think just go for it with Ian Lennox, please.
Okay, I'll do. Have you had a recently interesting telephonic link with us today?
Yes, I have. Thank you.
And will you be joining us again next week?
I hope so. Yes, I hope so. With another Newcastle victory.
Who are you playing
at? Anthony's defeat. I've got no... Oh, I've got Oxford in the cup.
Yeah,
I thought so. We might scrape a draw there, yes.
Yeah, okay. We're at home to Fulham.
He's hoping.
And Tottenham, of course, you have an away game to Southampton in the FA Cup, fourth round.
Oh, they're an informed team, they are. Southampton. Look at
them.
They've shot at the league.
Yeah, there we are. Not as much as Burnley, of course, who actually managed to get an interesting result yesterday.
Oh, amazing.
Small mercies. a little bit dodgy. Siren Radio, Midweek Drive, Morning Edition. It's coming up to 3 minutes. 3 minutes to 9 o'clock. If you've got to be somewhere for 9 o'clock, just go back to bed. No, we didn't say that. Honestly, just relax, enjoy. You know, everything will come to its right and appropriate time. We will hopefully be speaking to Phoebe Buckley from KY Jelly, actually, in the next part of the programme, talking about how health-conscious people are leading the way when it comes to a good intimate life. Extraordinary. So never mind. We'll find out exactly which parts of the country are down as sex neglectors and a whole range of other bits and pieces, which will be an interesting challenge, and we'll work our way through that in the lead-up to William Sitwell, who is en route to a winery somewhere in Sussex. And then we'll probably be talking about the challenges of the gig economy with Cara Gamel, and indeed somebody who's suffered as a direct result of being in the gig economy, Tracy Clark. So that's still to come as far as the Midweek Drive Morning Edition is concerned. We have three fabulous folk obviously now with us, Eleanor Lodge, Rory McGowan and Emma Street. We might be joined by Beverly Spencer, we don't know, but we will be continuing with some sensational music such as The Script. Excellent. And the weather today, highs of 8 degrees centigrade, lows of 5 degrees centigrade in Lincoln. A day of thick cloud with light winds. Okay, moving on to this fascinating survey which reveals that as far as the North is concerned, 13% of folk in the North are categorised as experimental when it comes to personal bedroom habits and so on. 20% are health conscious and 25%, a quarter, are sex neglectors. Now, to actually start identifying this and talk about some of the survey which was commissioned by KY Jelly, we have from that very same company the wonderful Phoebe Buckley. How are you, Phoebe?
Hello, I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm splendid. We have three fabulous folk in the studio as well. I'm sure we'll have one or two little comments to make about this. In a sense, I mean, Emma, you've already made a point that this is kind of fairly obvious that the more healthy you are, the more likely you are to feel generally fit, and as a result, that might translate into relations and so on.
Well, I thought so. I thought that way, you know, you've got a bit more stamina in the bedroom or whatever, and you're a bit more healthy. So.
And yet, it would seem, Phoebe, that with binge watching in bed, scrolling through iPhones, pressures of modern life, juggling work responsibilities and family commitments, gradually that magic just diminishes over time.
That is so true. I think that with the introduction of a lot of people TVs in the bedroom, which from me is a total no-no in terms of introducing intimacy, bedrooms should just be for having sex and sleeping. That's what kind of the bedroom is for.
Drastic
so people
thoughts.
Tend to Yeah. People tend to flop onto bed, put Netflix on, and then forget all about kind of even getting intimate with a partner, even sometimes not even leading to sex, even just the cuddling part, even sometimes gets forgotten about with busy lifestyles. So, yeah, it is a bit of a
let's face it, if it's a choice between seeing the next episode of The Crown and you know, you've just got to, it's a tough call to actually make from that point of view. Rory, any surprises from your own point of view? Again, we're not asking for individual details or any anecdotes on this particular aspect, but any thoughts from yourself?
So far, just kind of reading through the results, it seems that the...
Like the football scores, isn't it, really, in many ways?
Reading through the results, 15%, though. 50% of people in the North are categorised as experimental, which is the lowest in Britain. Is that necessarily a surprise for the North?
At the end of the day, in the North, we know what we like, and we're not going to engage in any of those strange southern experiments in any way, shape, or form.
Was there anything surprising about the results that you found?
I think the key element for us is that when you are a bit more health conscious and you look after your health, in terms of you have a 360 approach to everything, and I think a big issue at the minute is body confidence for a lot of people. And I think that that is a key kind of, that's what leads to the sex neglect a little bit, is the fact that they don't love themselves, so they don't feel like having sex is on the top of their agenda either. And I think that is quite upsetting, really, to say that's actually going on, and people aren't loving their bodies and aren't loving themselves and paying attention to themselves. So I think definitely that health conscious segment are definitely leading the way in moving forward with having more sex, because they are looking after themselves.
Well, when it comes to obviously your own company, originally introduced in January 1904 by a pharmaceutical company and suture manufacturer Van Horn and Sawtelle of New York City, it's been, I suppose, the subject of so many comments over the years, which you're not going to go into for obvious broadcast reasons from that point of view. But it is something which clearly is there, as presumably Phoebe, a kind of a way if people are sort of feeling that they need just that little bit of extra help from that point of view. There's always a bit of KY jelly might just do the trick.
Definitely, totally agree. I think lubricant's so important. Through the study, we found that a lot of people, regardless of age, were suffering from painful sex and discomfort during sex. And I think there's a massive stigma towards lubricants at the minute, particularly with younger audiences, that they are just used for older people suffering from vaginal dryness, which I think is totally wrong. I'm a young person myself, and I think I speak to like a few of my friends, and using lubricants shouldn't be seen as a bad thing. Sex is all about fun and not about discomfort, so using lubricants can enhance that.
Phoebe, here we were thinking you were an octogenarian. It's amazing. I just thought you just sounded young. It's amazing. Just a whole new world there. Eleanor, any thoughts or comments from yourself?
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? You know, like Lucy and Emma were saying, you know, if you feel better, you know, if you look better, you're obviously going to be more interested in, you know, that sort of thing.
Technically, I think it was Rory as opposed to Lucy. He's not actually become transgendered.
Oh.
We had been thinking, at one stage, we might have spoken to Lucy Beresford, but she's out of the country. She's left Phoebe to do a fabulous job. It's all there. It's all very confusing. Phoebe, where's the best place to go to find out further details about this particular area? Would you point people in the direction of nhs.uk/livewell/exercise, or would it be superdrug.com/KY jelly?
I think definitely the NHS is always a good place for people to look, but we do have a few social media pages, so KY Jelly UK on Facebook and Instagram. There's some top tips on there, there's a bit of fun facts about sex, intimacy, and more about just relationships and reconnecting with your partner, and some key information and statistics on there as well. So
there we are. I think I won't obviously ask you, are you an experimentalist, health-conscious soul, or a sex neglector, because it's too much information. We'll step away from that. It's been great actually sharing some thoughts with your good self today, Phoebe. Take care of yourself, and I'm sure we'll speak again in the near future. All the very best now.
Thank you very much. Speak to you soon.
Sometimes the feeling is right, you fall in love for the first time. Heartbeat and kisses so sweet, summertime love in the moonlight. I feel now this summer.
Wake up now. Wake up, Dr. Jones. Wake up, William Sitwell. It's Aqua. How exciting. William, en route to a winery somewhere in the joys of Sussex, I believe.
Yeah, good morning. Good morning. Where do you get your music from?
Listen, if you've just done a feature on live broadcast radio on KY Jelly, you've got to be very sensitive in terms of what you're doing, in terms of following it. And that's what we chose Dr. Jones and Aqua for. It's all part and parcel of the rich tapestry of life.
That was your choice. We didn't have any input in that. Don't blame it on us.
Okay, fine. Obviously, we've got four fine folk in the studio this morning, William. We have Emma Street. You just heard her dulcet tones there.
Yes, hello.
Rory McGowan.
Hello there.
Eleanor Lodge.
You nearly forgot that. Good morning.
And just arrived, dancer extraordinaire and Keane's fine, so also creative writer and journalist. That would be the wonderful Beverly Spencer.
Hello.
Marvellous. William, talk to us first and foremost about this winery that you're heading off to, and will you be imbibing? Because I think, Emma, you were confused. You were thinking, but isn't he doing Dry January?
Yes, that was my concern.
Yeah, I am doing what I call Dry generally. And it might be torture because I'm not going to be sipping anything, but wow. I'm going to be looking and sniffing and
good.
Perusing.
Yeah.
I'm going to a place called Whiston, which is one of the interesting vineyards in Sussex. Planted about 12 years ago by the Goring family, who used to have a lot of turkeys. They were a huge turkey producer in this part of the world, and. The current mother of the current farmer, the guy who runs the vineyard, it's from South Africa, and it was always her passion to try and grow a vineyard. So they, in 2008, long after the turkeys had uttered their last gobble gobble, they planted Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, and Pinot Meunier, which are the three grapes you need to grow sparkling wine, and yeah, they're one of the really interesting vineyards down here in Sussex, along with Rathfinney, which is an extraordinary place not far from here. And it's all part of our exciting food culture as we look with huge excitement into the sunny uplands of England and Britain's future.
I love that. I mean, you're addressing it in so many positive ways that suddenly I feel as though, yes, William Sitwell really should be occupying 10 Downing Street. That's the classic line. Anybody who can actually
thing is that, of course, there was a view down here that they should be calling this champagne Sussex, but I think everyone now has gone off that name. It's
bit of a challenge. Yeah, I know. I don't know. I mean, maybe Archie. They could actually call it Archie. Maybe that'd be neutral, perhaps.
Very good idea. Yeah. Glass of Archie. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. Was it secretly made in Canada?
If anybody can actually uncover the possible truth behind that allegation, I'm sure William Sitwell will be on the case. Sitwell stirs it up. You know, suggestion that Sussex wines, after the turkeys had gone, originally shipped over from Canada. I still have to say, once again, William, with Sitwell stirs it up in the Daily Telegraph once again this week, it was quite the most perfect dish of chicken away from my kitchen I can imagine. It's amazing. Clearly, yeah. a man who likes his chicken, and presumably chicken as opposed to turkeys. Really, would you go more chicken as opposed to turkey when it comes to white meat?
Yeah, I'm afraid I'm like most people in this country. I have turkey once a year, but I don't do it reluctantly. I do it joyfully, but I don't go near turkey for the rest of the year, I'm afraid. And I mean, I like chicken, but the chicken's good. Yeah. I had a savagely awful chicken last night in a restaurant that I'll be reviewing. But the chicken at Trivet in Bermondsey, if you have the sort of money that means that one of your main problems in life is how to insure your super yacht, then go there.
Two course lunch for two at indeed the Trivet in Bermondsey, a mere £102.50. I mean, I feel that's easy peasy. That's like £51.25 a person. Beverly, any questions for William? As it's your first ever Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
Yes, William, what's your preference, white or red, and what will you be mainly testing down there?
Well, it depends on what I want and what I'm hoping for in the moment. I don't drink red at night because it keeps me awake. Well, I sleep until 4 and then wake up panicking. And I discovered this a few years ago, so I quit red. So I only drink red at lunchtime. But I love, so the whites I drink I love really great white Burgundy, so I love Chardonnay. I love the wines that you get in parts of Austria. I have quite a kind of broad range of light. And in terms of reds, I don't know really, you know, I love classic Bordeaux, you know, Cabernet Sauvignon and so on. I think the best English white wine is called Suffolk's Reserve. It's made on the Nutbourne farm by the Gladwin brothers, who have a few restaurants in London. And it comes in a beautifully long bottle, rather like the wines you get from Alsace, you know, those long, thin-shaped
yes.
Rieslings. So that's, I think, my favourite English wine. In terms of what Whiston does, like a lot of the great Sussex vineyards, it only makes sparkling wine. And so it has that classic champagne blend. And what's interesting about Sussex is the land and the soil here is identical to Epernay, the heart of Champagne. And in fact, someone the other day took a soil sample from here to Epernay, and the guy in Epernay said, why are you bringing me local chalk? And so the raft of chalk, the chalk seam that goes from Sussex, is the same chalk you get in Epernay. So with climate change, you're going to get very similar conditions in this part of the world in Sussex, which is why so many people are growing sparkling wine down here with an eye to the future. So, yeah, Pinot Noir, Pinot Meunier, and Chardonnay, those are the three grapes that you make for the classic blend of sparkling wine.
And that is just one of the reasons why when we just sneaks the news out with, well, I mean, it hasn't been made official as yet, contracts are still being signed, but when we suggested that hopefully William Sitwell has said tentatively yes to coming up to the Lincoln Book Festival, such excitement, honestly. I mean, you know, literally, yes, Rory, he may well be here in person for that
fantastic.
Professor. Exactly. Just, you know, the palpitations have already started, William, in the little village of Lincoln, as you can tell. I mean, it's awesome
good,
stuff
good.
There. Yeah. Eleanor, would you like to put those last two questions to William Sidwell, please?
I'll try. Have you had a reasonably enjoyable telephonic link with us, William, this morning?
Well, I have. I hope you tolerate it. I hope you're okay.
I mean, it has been very informative. I mean, again, that kind of the positive side of climate change, you see, that we can actually now have our own sparkling
wine. It's
very
interesting.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't know that.
I mean, if Donald Trump knew about that, he'd probably be using it in his kind of debates with the rest of the Davos people.
Mm.
And the next
you
one?
Know, the great wine writer, Oz Clark, once said that when this country becomes a plonk country,
Oh.
What did he say?
I know.
Nobody
this
knows.
Is the story. Are you still there? Have we lost you, William? Yes, we got the great Oz Clark, and then we lost you again. And I think we have lost him.
We lost him again.
You see, it's that sense of drama. that sense of drama that actually opens up the
we'll
whole thing.
We'll never know if we'll have him back. I didn't get to ask him the second part of the question.
Well, we'll just have to pray to the good lords and ladies of broadcasting heaven that he will actually return. That's the important thing. Unless, of course, he's had an incident and he wasn't hands-free. I'm sure he was. I'm sure he was hands-free on his way to Sussex. So there we are. I'll hopefully say on his behalf that William Sitwell shall return.
I'm
in terms of vocabulary over the last few years has been the gig economy, and it's one of those areas which certainly has got a lot of impact in terms of our general society, etc., especially when we actually look at some of the findings that have recently been produced from Income Protection Task Force that suggests that almost half of gig economy workers have been unable to work long-term due to ill health. 2 in 3 temporary workers returned to work before they should have following a long-term illness or injury. And indeed, 10 million gig economy workers are at greater risk of financial disaster. So not good news from that point of view, and the best people to surely begin to address some of the challenges with respect to that are ACE personal finance experts, the wonderful Cara Gamble. How are you, Cara?
I'm very well, thank you.
And also taking part in somebody who's actually in part of the gig economy, Tracy Clark. How are you, Tracy?
Yeah, hi, good morning.
Tracy, can you talk us through your own particular situation, please, and again share with us how you've kind of obviously sort of found that this whole notion and finding that gig economy, I mean, it sounds great, it sounds like you're in a band, doesn't it? You're having gig here, gig there, etc. But it's actually the reality is something much more difficult than that.
Indeed, yeah. Oh, you wouldn't want to hear me singing either. But
I don't know.
No, definitely. I promise you wouldn't. It's okay. Not nice. I was originally a hospital pharmacy technician, so I had a long career in hospital pharmacy. So I had a good salary, good career, good income, and I was then registered blind or severely vision impaired in 2011. And nobody saw that coming, pardon the pun. It was completely unpredictable and came as a huge shock. And as a result of that, long story short, but basically I ended up losing my income and sadly didn't have any income protection in place because we'd cancelled it a few years ago because we couldn't afford to pay the premiums. Or we didn't budget accordingly to pay the premiums. And, you know, hindsight is incredibly cruel. And I now, you know, really wish that we'd budgeted differently and kept it going, but we didn't.
And ultimately, Cara, I mean, the story that Tracy just shared with us there, it's not an isolated incident. I mean, there are situations where, again, it's not necessarily sort of saying, oh, we'll just live for the day and let tomorrow take care of itself. You know, there are issues. I mean, I was standard fine, over a fifth of gig economy workers have taken out a payday loan to make ends meet. 14% have gambled. Another 14% have actually needed to use a food bank. These are not good findings, are they?
No, they're not. And it's something that's becoming more prevalent as the way that we work changes. I mean, gone are the days of everyone working for an employer. You know, more and more of us are becoming members of the gig economy. I'm one myself as a freelance journalist. And basically what that is, it's the way of we work for temporary jobs or doing separate pieces of work, and they're all being paid individually rather than getting a salary from an employer. But, you know, with anyone, when you work like that, the cash flow can always be an issue, but you don't get sick pay. So if you become unable to work due to illness or problems, you know, issues with mental health, that can very quickly become a spiral of debt. And if you don't have an emergency cushion in place, you are, you know, people to have to take drastic measures. And unfortunately, it's happening more and more.
So what's the solution? I mean, is it a case of we need to actually radically rethink the notion? I mean, I think it used to be called, and certainly for our students in the humanities, we used to talk about having a career portfolio, which sounds, you know, you're putting things together and you're working through that. One of the aspects about, obviously, the new technologies, it does mean that more and more people, including journalists, are kind of faced with having to work through that. What are the kind of strategies that could put into place? Or is it just a case of we need to grin and bear it because it's going to get worse in the 21st century?
Well, I think in a lot of ways, with the, you know, the gig economy for me, it's been excellent because I am able to work around. I have a child, I'm a single parent, and I'm able to have kind of the best of both worlds in many ways. But also, I think one thing that's really crucial is just like you think about how you're going to pay your taxes, you need to think about how you're going to pay the bills if you become unwell, because, you know, statistics show that that is going to happen. And, you know, figures from the Financial Conduct Authority show that only 1 in 10 of us actually have income protection. And that's a type of insurance that pays you monthly a portion of your income until retirement or the end of the term or death to ensure that you can pay the bills. It's all well and good, you know, if you maybe you're mortgage-free, but if you can't pay for food or how to run your house, then you can quickly get into a lot of financial difficulty.
So let's talk a little bit about, again, strategies to put into place with respect to that. I mean, obviously, I'm looking at the Your Best Friends, money-saving blog extraordinaire from that point, which is always good. But what would be your top tips, Cara, to actually say, to Tracy, indeed, etc., and others who may have gone through this, what are the processes they can actually put into place from now?
Well, I think the main thing is if you're working for yourself, or, you know, if you're even working for an employer, don't depend on, you know, thinking that the government is going to look after you, because they will give you, you know, some financial support, but it, you know, it's not enough to cover even most people's mortgages. So I would say, you know, part, just like, you know, 7 in 10 of us are insuring our homes against theft or fire, but, you know, how many of us are actually, you know, ensuring our income? And that's, I think it has to become as commonplace as, you know, getting travel insurance and getting car insurance, because the reality is you can't pay for anything else if you don't have any money coming in each month. So the best thing to do, in my opinion, is to, you know, do your research, speak to some brokers, and the younger you are when you take out the policy, the more affordable it can be. And, I mean, it's not even as expensive as you might think. It's, you know, it's half the price of a gym membership for the average 30-year-old person. So, you know, if you just factor that into your budget, then you, if something goes wrong, you'll be grateful that you have that protection in place.
And Tracy, I mean, clearly we're not looking back from that video. Are you getting through the system? I mean, is it a case of, you know, despite sort of things, oh, I wish I'd done that, if I only had a time machine, I can go back and do exactly what Cara's just said. Is this something, Tracy, that you are seeing progress from your own point of view, that actually things are opening up a little bit?
I think for us, we've learned to adapt, but I certainly reiterate what Cara says very definitely, that budget for it, because the state doesn't provide sufficiently. You know, the NHS is fantastic in the early stages, but the support that comes with insurance protection is simply not there available in the state systems at all. All the other services that come with insurance protection, so it's not just an income, there's all sorts of other wonderful things that come with it. People to turn to, advice centres, hub of information, that kind of thing is more important almost than the money, but the money obviously is a key thing, and it is the monthly income that's the issue. Tim and I are existing on benefits, but we actually faced bankruptcy because of me losing my income, simply because we just could not meet the bills. And we did have debts. We had, as Cara said, credit cards and bank loans and a mortgage on the mortgage and all the rest of it. And there's no way that we could sustain that. And there's absolutely no way that benefits will cover that, whereas an income protection, you know, probably would have done. And we would probably still be, well, possibly might still be living in our house, whereas now we're not. We actually live aboard a narrowboat. And don't get me wrong, we have no regrets about that. But it became, you know, a wonderful choice. I think the other option would have been cardboard boxes under Worthing Pier. You know, we were literally facing bankruptcy because of the loss of income.
And Cara, where would you say people should actually go to find out further information about what we've been talking about today? They're just caught part of the conversation. You want to find out more about the details, where would you point them?
Well, you can search. There's information on the Income Protection Task Force. You can find brokers. You know, LifeSearch, for instance, is a great company that would help you find out what you need and help you find a policy that's suitable for your specific needs and your family, whether you have children or whether you don't. And the main thing is to always remember, when you do take out a policy, they will ask you a lot of health questions, but it's always best to be completely honest so that you ensure that you have a cover that will actually pay out if it should happen. And, you know, there's a lot to be said about the stress of not being able to make ends meet. If you're unwell anyway, that additional stress isn't going to help your health either. So I think the main thing is to go and contact a broker locally and find out what you need to protect yourself.
Cara Gamble, a personal finance expert, and indeed Tracy Clark, of course, so part of the First Guide Dog Partnership to Live on a Narrow Boat in the UK. There's got to be a musical that can be written about that, Tracy, surely. just put it out there. Many thanks indeed, and keep on keeping on. Take care now.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And if you want to get hold of the book, Your Best Friends, that's pretty much available now from all good bookstores, etc. And also to access the money-saving blog called Your Best Friends. Beverly, gig economy. I mean, dancing is kind of part and parcel of that whole system, isn't it? You sort of just work. So no sort of real change in terms of your working experiences.
No, not at all. You just have to get used to the fact that you're going to be on one short contract, and then while you're finishing that one, you're looking out for the next and live from day to day.
Okay. And Cara obviously talked there about the life of a journalist being very much focused on that basis. Rory, does that give you cause for concern?
Maybe a little bit. Of course, day to day is just kind of, it comes with the course of journalism, really, because obviously news changes from day to day, so you've got to always be on the lookout for the next story or wherever you're going next. There is a bit of concern there, but I don't think, you would be aware of it before you even thought about becoming a journalist, I'd hope.
And fears about the gig economy for yourself, Eleanor?
It's obviously not an ideal situation to be in. I currently have a part-time job and I'm on a 0 hours contract, and it works well for me because I'm a student and it's flexible, and I have sort of the support of my family, but I bet without that to fall back on, it would be a very vulnerable position to be in.
I think the point that was made there, I mean, Tracy, who did have a full-time post and was doing quite well in all sorts of ways, but literally a run of bad luck, her partner's made redundant, and she loses her vision and sight, etc., and problems obviously ensue. Just got to keep on going. Any thoughts from yourself, Emma?
Yeah, I just think it's really sad that when people get ill or whatever, there's that pressure to, get back and make money as soon as they can, and the fact that they have to take out loans as well to make ends meet, which just
becomes a vicious circle.
Isn't ideal.
From upcoming news, next week's Midweek Drive, we just had confirmed Larry Nemeczek is joining us, talking about the Picard miniseries, which of course is probably going to be binge-watched extensively, especially now Whoopi Goldberg has agreed to be in the second series of Picard, which has already been announced, so that's interesting stuff there. We've also, next Thursday, hopefully we'll be welcoming Alan Stevens back to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition, where he'll be reviewing the latest two episodes in the Chris Chibnall, Jodie Whittaker Doctor Who scenario. So that's our upcoming treats at 7 o'clock this evening. Sound and Country Vision, yes, if you didn't have enough of Tessa's tunes, etc., there's a whole hour of great stuff coming up with Tessa Snart this evening with Leanie Jane and others just after 7 o'clock here on Siren Radio. Emma, you have a very special person who is genetically related to your good self now, who is going to actually have a little dedication and indeed a piece of music, a record actually spun for her back in the old disc jockey days, basically, because I think she's young enough to remember the times where actually it wasn't all digital, it was actually physical.
Definitely.
Physically made. Yeah. Would you like to take this opportunity then to wish birthday greetings to this very special person?
Yes, it's my grandma's birthday today, she's 75, and this is Here You Come Again by Dolly Parton.
Right in the door, just like you've done before, and wrap my heart round your little finger. Here you come again, just when I'm about to make it work without you. You look into my eyes and lie those pretty eyes, and pretty soon I'm wondering.
happened, there's no doubt about it. Come the 31st of January, the beginnings of course Brexit will be taking place and happening and so on. And this still is causing challenges for people who are pretty unsure in terms of what to actually do. A fifth of people in the East Midlands have admitted that uncertainty of Brexit has caused them to change their European holiday plans, with a number of key aspects relating to this. Now, to address some of the anxieties that might be felt in this particular instance, we're delighted to welcome two superb individuals. First of all, professional travel writer and broadcaster, the wonderful Andy Mossock. How are you, Andy?
Well, I like the wonderful part. Yes, I'm good, thank you.
It's very important that we're positive. And indeed, the editor-in-chief of the awesome Holiday Extras, that's Seamus McCauley. How are you, Seamus?
Very well, good morning.
Excellent. Andy, in your capacity as a travel writer from that point of view, are you worried? Yeah. Are we concerned? Is it a case of we don't know, the barriers could go up, we'll be banned, there'll be all sorts of challenges, we'll have to wait for customs for 2 weeks, and then by the time we get through customs, the holiday will be over?
Honestly, no. I think it's a little bit scaremongering. I think Europe is a fabulous place to go. So culturally diverse, lots of different countries, lots of choices. So it's always going to be a favourite. I think the problem is just to make sure that it's people should know exactly what they're heading for. You know, this year should be no changes whatsoever. But I think looking at the Brexit holiday checker, it would make things simple. That's all we need. We just need peace of mind.
Is that the case, Seamus? I mean, from your own point of view, I mean, clearly there's been an awful lot of propaganda on both sides of the argument going on for years and years about this whole sort of system, well, certainly 3 years at least, and the kind of the uncertainty, the unsurety. There are lots of anecdotal tales about the way it used to be, you know, back in the pre-1970s, where you know, you'd have sort of overzealous customs officers, etc. Is it a case of actually we need to realise we're all human beings sharing a similar continent here?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. I mean, we've been running the same survey to a couple of thousand people a month for the last 2 years to find out how people feel about Brexit and how it's changing their holiday plans. Now, with the last two Brexit dates, last March and last October, there was a lot of uncertainty, and I think that was very legitimate uncertainty. At those times, no one was quite sure what was going to happen next about Brexit, and no one was quite sure how that would affect our rights to travel to the EU. This time round, we're seeing the same uncertainty again. People are cautious about booking a holiday to the EU after the 31st of January. But happily, this time there's no reason to be unsure. We know exactly what's going to happen. We're going to leave the EU on the 31st of January. Then we go into a transition period, during which we have exactly the same right to travel to the EU as we did as members. So for the whole of 2020, we can go to everywhere in Europe exactly as we could before, and there's nothing to worry about whatsoever.
And tying into that, obviously, issues relating to healthcare abroad, etc., up to a quarter of those surveyed feared limited accessibility of medical insurance. Is that something, Andy, which again is problematic with respect to focus? Clearly, although we might like to think we're going to be in perfect health, there are obviously unexpected things that can arise.
Yes, there are, and I think we need to be clear that you should always take holiday insurance anyway. That will cover it for you. I think it's very, very important that holiday insurance is taken out. But again, for the next 12 months, there should be no change anyway. So from that point of view, it should remain the same.
12 months can obviously pass in a blink of an eye. For those folk who are even more anxious about sort of what's going to happen in 2021, do you think the deals will be sorted through, Seamus? Will it be a case of we'll get there, we'll muddle through somehow?
2021 becomes a bit more of an issue. So, you know, the key message is for the whole of this year, you're absolutely fine travelling as you did before. What happens after the end of this year is less certain. It depends on what we negotiate. It depends on what our government agrees with the EU government. So there's a couple of possible outcomes. One is that we get a very good deal, in which case travelling to Europe will be very straightforward. Even in the worst case, where we get no deal at all or a very thin deal, there's a thing called the Schengen visa, which would still allow us to travel to Europe just with a little bit more paperwork and a little bit more expense. So in the worst case, it will cost us more money to go to the continent, and we'll need new paperwork every 90 days we do it, but it's still perfectly feasible to do so.
And overall, prognosis good? I mean, for people actually looking to travel there? Because, I mean, I know that certainly a lot of public service sectors and universities being parcel of that have kind of flagged up a whole range of things to let people know travel plans, etc., if we're heading off in any way, shape or form around the 31st of January.
I think, from my point of view, I think it's in both parties' interest to make sure that this is seamless. And I think with the EU and the UK, tourism and travel and destination travel is immensely important. And from my personal opinion, I don't think there will be any problems at all.
Oh.
Well, again, probably positive side of things. For 63% of those surveyed, Brexit hadn't had any implications on their travel plans at all. Maybe they're not going to Europe, I don't know. Perhaps they are. They could have just misanswered. Where can people go to find out further details about what we've been chatting about today, and maybe, as I say, put some of those fears to bed in terms of the concern and confusion over Brexit and travel?
Absolutely. So we've pulled together all the information people need to make that decision with confidence and with the data. If you go and search for Brexit Holiday Checker on Google, or if you just go to the Holiday Extras website, you'll be able to put in the dates of your trip and the destination you're going to, and depending on when and where you're going, so say you're going before the 31st of January, that will just tell you we're still in the EU, nothing to worry about. If you're going for the rest of this year, between 31st of January and the end of this year, it will tell you, there's a little bit of change, but actually travel is exactly the same. And then from the end of this year onwards, if you put in destinations in Europe, it'll give you really comprehensive information about all the possible things you need to know, how to travel to the EU after we've actually left and the transition period's come to an end. So that's Brexit Holiday Checker. Just put that into Google and it'll tell you everything you need.
Still seems a little bit sad to be losing those European passports, I suppose. I mean, now we're back to the old British passports. I don't know. It's another line entirely. I'm sure they'll go for a huge sum of money to collectors in years to come as a historical artefact. But maybe that's another story. Andy Mossack and Seamus McCauley, many thanks indeed, and happy holidays, gentlemen.
Thank you very much. You too.
I don't know. Do we care? Let's actually test in the studio. Emma, will you be sad to lose the European passport? Now, obviously, it's all happening and travelling there. Apparently, we're OK, at least until December the 31st, 2020. After that, who knows what could happen?
I'm very sad about the whole situation, to be honest. But yes, I will be sad to lose
the passport. We must be brave. That's all. We must be brave.
Yes. It's all the uncertainty, though, isn't it? If we all knew what 100% was happening...
Yeah, but then
even next year,
wouldn't the interest factor be taken away from us then?
No,
it keeps life interesting. Rory, what about yourself?
I was reading some passport rankings the other day because I have a really interesting life. Mm. And apparently our passport has gone from like one of the best passports to get you into any country visa free. It's dropped down.
To people laughing at it now.
Yeah.
So you must be joking, honestly.
So I think I am going to miss it, yeah.
Hmm. Passport to Pimlico, now that was a great movie. Before everybody's time, actually, before my time, but Passport to Pimlico, where they actually discovered it. It was an evening comedy where they discovered the suburb of in Pimlico of a special sort of thing, and they all had passports there. It's very impressive. Eleanor, there will be a time, doubtless, where you'll need a passport to move back to Yorkshire and indeed Lincolnshire, and that sort of thing will be there when Yorkshire declares independence.
That is a goal of my mother's. She actually wants Yorkshire to be independent. She tells me all the time it's bigger. Did she say it's bigger than Wales or bigger than somewhere? She says we should have our own government, we should have our own this.
What a great slogan for Yorkshire, though. Yorkshire, it's bigger than somewhere. I mean, that's...
See it now. I can see that.
Dominic Cummings can actually come on board, sort of give some advice, you know. You actually say, we want something that's bigger than somewhere. That's what I want. Bigger than somewhere there, and Yorkshire is it. So it's great stuff there.
Mm. No, but our passports are so iconic. I don't want them to change. And I only just renewed my one, so,
To be one of the last... holders of a kind of European-based passport. Or has it gone from that? It's just,
Hope not.
And Beverly, as a European traveller and journey so all over the place, will you be sad to say farewell to the last 50-odd years that we've had a European passport?
Well, I just think we need to find out what's going to happen, really. I'm not fussed either way. The company I work for, who send us off all over the world, they don't seem to be too worried. You've still got to get your visas to enter into Hong Kong and... China and USA, the same thing. So I don't really know what's going to happen.
Well, there we are, the considered views of this morning's Midweek Drive Morning Edition team. Farewells and greetings and various other bits and pieces after JP Cooper. Curiously entitled Passport Home.
I just stepped off the train, dodging the evening rain. These days just ain't the same without you, lady. Right now my feet are wet and they don't know the steps. Or maybe they regret me leaving, lady. You're my passport home, my guiding light, my hand to hold, Don't you know that you're my passport home? Without you close, I can't go on. So darling, keep the light on. Keep the light on. Keep the light on. Keep the light on. I step back on the stage. The people call my name.
JP. Of course you can. You can go on. Thanks to Gabriella Peralta, Richard Fitzwilliams, Ian Lennox, Phoebe Buckley, William Sitwell, Kari Gamble, Tracy Clark, Andy Mossack, Seamus McCauley, Eleanor Lodge, Rory McGowan, Emma Street and Beverly Spencer, and you for being with us for however long you've been on the Madrid Drive Morning Edition. You should be able to listen to it all again in the not-too-distant future. It'll be up as a podcast, hopefully in the next 24 hours. If not, listen to last night's show, which is already online at southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. An exciting day awaits, Beverly, for yourself, no doubt.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. And for yourself, Emma.
Yes, very exciting.
And for yourself, Rory.
Yeah, very busy. I've got some interviews later today, yeah, actually.
And also, if people are actually around in the vicinity, you might like to check out the wonderful Professor Jason Whittaker, who's going to be doing a lecture on the future of journalism in respect of technologies and so on. It's at 3:45 p.m. in the Cargill Lecture Theatre on the University of Lincoln campus, if you fancy working through that. If you're stuck in a traffic jam, travelling to graduation, don't worry, take care with your journey. According to the official line here, graduation is the most important day in the academic lives of yourselves, students, etc. So the ceremony has actually been delayed already by 15 minutes to 10:45 a.m. So there we are. Yeah, it'll work out okay. If you're 16 minutes late, tough, but never mind. Have a great day in any way, shape or form. What we're going to say is our sort of final...
happy graduation day.
I think that would be good. Think that would be good. Okay, so a 1, 2, 3.
Happy graduation day.
If you're a postgraduate, of course, because the undergraduates are in the summer.